Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk with your host, of course, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Luann Crane here with Ryan Dobson.
And we're going to dive into a topic today that I know it's going to hit home with most of our listeners, and that is finances. In today's society, so many families are living paycheck to paycheck and doing everything they can to make ends meet. Last year, a study was released showing that the average income of the American household was worse in 2011 than at the end of the recession in 2009.
Yikes, Ryan. And I know many people listening right now have felt that personally.
Oh, yeah.
I am especially looking forward to this program today because our family is going through a transition with a change in income as well. So you already have my rapt attention.
Well, to help us come up with some of those solutions on how we can spend less and save more. Do we believe that?
I need to do it.
We can, and it can be done. We've invited America's family financial expert, Ellie Kay, to be with us today. Ellie's written over a dozen books and is a frequent media guest on shows like Nightline, Money Matters, Fox News, Primetime, and CNN's The Flip Side, and many, many more. She's also a national commentator and has appeared on Janet Parshall's America and Family Life Today with Dennis Rainey. Ellie and her husband, Bob, have seven children and are currently living in Palmdale, California. And we appreciate you being here today, Ellie.
Well, thank you. It's really great to be with you guys today.
And Ellie, obviously, you're speaking as an expert now, but it wasn't always that way. You came about this from some pretty harsh experience. In fact, if I understand this correct, as Ryan said, you and your husband have seven children. And at one point, you were $40,000 in debt, living on a military salary of just $55,000 a year. And yet, you managed to pay off that debt in just about 2.5 years. So I think it's important to take us back to those days and help us understand what it was like and what you were up against at that point.
Well, when I married my husband so many years ago, I got a 3-for-1 deal. I married what I called the world's greatest fighter pilot, and I also inherited two beautiful stepdaughters. And then my husband said, let's join the military and we'll see the world. But what he actually showed me was 5 more babies in the first 7 years of marriage. Then we took the show on the road because we moved 11 times in 13 years.
Military.
So it was quite a challenge back then. One of the things that I also inherited was $40,000 worth of consumer debt. And my husband felt like he needed to go into the military full time. So he went from the reserves to the active duty military, and he took a $15,000 a year pay cut in order to do that. I was a broker before we got married, but obviously that's not a sustainable career when you're moving all the time and when you're having so many sweet little babies. And I decided that I would start to make my career learning ways to save money in the home. So we prayed, we committed our finances to doing things God's way, and we asked that He would help us become financially free. So within 2.5 years, by following biblical principles of good stewardship, by becoming master savers in following things God's way, we were able to pay off all of that consumer debt in only 2.5 years. So we were very thankful that we could do that because we have remained debt-free ever since.
Oh, now, Ellie, I know some people are listening thinking, yeah, but you ate ramen and you never went out to eat and you bought everybody your clothing at Goodwill, and we just can't do that. Is that the way you lived?
That wasn't the way we lived. We did some things differently. Mm-hmm. We did buy clothing at consignment stores. I did learn to become a master at shopping at garage sales, getting clothing with the tags still on them that have never been worn. So we did a little bit of things like that. But we had really good meals. We had a great quality of life. We were still able to take family vacations and spend a lot of time together as a family. We just learned how to do things smarter and to save money in the process.
You even explained it as that was your full-time job. That's really interesting because there's a lot of people who say, I can do that, but that does seem like a lot of work. So right up front, give us a picture about that.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work, isn't it, to really attack debt and live wisely?
It can be a lot of work. And one of the things that we started with was a commitment. We decided that we didn't want to be a servant to the lender anymore. We didn't want to have this debt hanging over our head because it limited our freedom so much. So we made a commitment that every extra check that came in, that every time we saved money in a certain area, we would take that money that was saved or we would take that check that was coming in and we would put it towards consumer debt. But we knew that if we lived a life that was just a little bit more restrictive for a season, then we could have a lifetime of financial freedom. So that was our focus at the time.
Yeah, and reducing your debt by $40,000 in 2.5 years, you essentially were making $16,000 a year. as a stay-at-home mom raising kids, you are doing all this and lowering your debt. I mean, that's a huge chunk as you essentially work on debt from home.
Well, that's right, Ryan. I mean, you hit the nail on the head, too, because one of the things I did originally was I became one of the original extreme couponers. And I was one of these people that would go into the grocery store. It was $125 before coupons, $10 after coupons. And I was able to save a tremendous amount of money becoming one of these extreme couponers. And Ryan, you said something really important. You said that I was making the equivalent of $16,000 a year. Well, when you save $16,000, that's the equivalent of making $20,000 by the time you paid Social Security and state and federal taxes.
Oh, yeah.
So a penny saved is actually more than a penny earned.
Wow, that's fantastic. That's really a shocking number. I think that actually encourages people that, hey, this is worthwhile. I can do this. And it brought your family close together.
It did. And we taught skills to our children in the process. And so now, I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse, but all of my young adult children and those that have gotten married, they have this uncanny ability to be able to save money. And of course, their spouses have to come along as well.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, honey, I've got a coupon for this restaurant. Let's go eat here.
Sure.
And they've learned to do that too.
Well, you talk about there are different personalities when it comes to money, that everybody has a different money personality. And your kids are now learning that with their new spouses, and you learned that with your husband. How do you figure out what your money personality is?
One of the things that I like to help people do is to discover basically whether they fall into one of two broad categories. I think that everyone is either a born spender or a born saver.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people are born savers because of different reasons, and that takes on a different personality. Some because they have a fear that they're going to be homeless or not have enough money or something like that. And then some are born spenders for different reasons. Some spend money to acquire affection from other people because they feel like they have to be the big spender and to buy that affection. So there's a lot of different reasons why you might be a born spender or a born saver, but understanding that can help you.
Luann, what are you? I'm a spender. I know that I am.
I am a saver.
Yep.
Yes, I am.
See, you have a good balance, even here in the studio today.
Well,
you
can already see how this would cause enormous strain on a marriage. In fact, we hear that finances are one of the key reasons for marital breakups. So just identifying this helps. But I do know we're talking to someone who says, no, actually, both of us are spenders or both of us are savers. Do you see that at all as well?
I do. And when you're both the same money personality, that's why it's important to get together, to talk about money issues, to be able to have a strategic plan so that you're both not off over-saving or you're both not spending at the same time. It is important to have balance, and that's what I love about approaching things from a biblical point of view. God can help us find that balance.
It took Laura and I about 5 years of marriage to start overcoming this issue because we're both spenders. And it's not like big, extravagant things. We nickel and dime ourselves to death. You know, it's a little thing here and there. It's not a big deal, just a couple of little things, but those add up. And we found ourselves really in trouble, and we started looking into it, and it was hard. It was a hard process to overcome, and I think we're probably still in that process, but it makes us a whole lot more secure. There aren't as many fights in the marriage, and we weren't fighting with each other like, you spent this or you spent that. It was just, there's always that underlying stress of, are we going to pay the bills on time this month or not?
Right. And that's something that a lot of families find in as they navigate finances in their marriage. And that's why it is important to be able to talk things through, to create these new habits that are essential to be able to reach your financial goals, whether it's paying off debt, whether it's starting to fund a retirement, whether it's starting to save for your kids' college, whatever those goals are, if you communicate and you have a plan, then you can hit that plan.
Which leads directly to one of your books, which is called The 60-Minute Money Workout. Now, right there, it sounds like it has to do with exercise, Ryan. I'm so not interested in this. I'm sorry. But seriously, you say we need to attack this. This is not something we can just casually fall into. You know, you're a newlywed and you just assume you will come together. Like
right.
You said, it took you 5 years. Explain what you are recommending with a 60-minute money workout.
This 60-minute money workout is something that we did on Nightline, and that gave me the idea for this book. We took a family that was on the brink of divorce because of financial issues. We showed them how to sit down just 1 hour a week and talk about money matters and find that they can get on the same sheet of music, that they can make progress in the areas of getting on a budget, of paying down consumer debt, of stopping the incessant arguments about money.
Yeah. Yeah.
So basically what you're doing is whenever you're tempted to start to argue about money or have a discussion that could escalate, you table it until your money night, whether it's Thursdays or whatever time you set up for 1 hour a week to be able to do a money workout. And the beautiful thing about a money workout is you're not going to be arguing about money for 2 to 3 to 4 hours and then have no resolution. This workout is very strategic. Mm. It has a beginning. It has an end. It's only going to last an hour. And when you know that, it gives you two things. It gives you confidence that you can do this weekly, because everyone can find 1 hour in their week to do it. And number two, you know that you're going to have to stay on task to be able to get through mm-hmm. all of the topics that you need to get through in that 1 hour. So you're more motivated to actually not waste time arguing,
sure.
but to talk about how can we make progress in this particular area of our finances.
Ellie, I wonder if there are people listening right now that are thinking one of two things. Either, oh no, I'm the spender, I'm the bad one in the family, or I'm the saver and my spouse is the bad one in the family. Are the spenders always negative? Is it they're always the one that's causing hardship in the family?
Mm. You know, I believe that it's neither good or bad. It just is. I mm-hmm. mean, it's just a tendency that you have. It's what you do with it. For example, I am the born saver. I know that's a shock. Okay, get ready for a shock. My husband is the born spender. And he has a great work ethic. He's a wonderful man, but he's a born spender. When he was 7 years old, he had a part-time job pulling weeds, made a good living for a little seven-year-old.
I could use him right now.
But his money never saw the inside of his pocket because he always spent it. Did that make him a bad person? Absolutely not. It was just his tendency. Me, on the other hand, I remember taking a trip to Spain to go see my cousins when I was 12 years old. I took over 3 rolls of film for my little camera. I came back with 2.5 rolls of film unspent. I saved 2.5 rolls. Now, that's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. I missed all those beautiful pictures. And so born savers have a tendency to not enjoy life, even when they can afford to. So that's why we need balance in a marriage. And that's why the 60-minute money workout really comes in handy.
Well, Ryan, you raise a great question, because we turn it internally and we automatically think I'm the problem here or something
right.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
And quite honestly, I got to tell you, Ellie, that when my husband and I sit down to pay bills or something like that, and it's, oh, we don't have the money to do that, or, oh, we're disappointed, I instantly just internalize that, and I feel offended or intimidated or something like mm-hmm. that. So I can see very easily how even this 1 hour could turn into a lot of friction. But you have set some very specific boundaries for this hour. So before we leave this topic, just explain a little bit more of what that would look like mm-hmm. so that somebody like me, who might be a little intimidated by this, feels a little freer to enter this conversation.
One of the things you do before you start your money workout is that you set specific boundaries. This is a place where they're going to be safe for the next hour. So there's no condescension of any kind. There's not the idea that one person's right and the other person's wrong. There's no name calling. There's no throwing of food. You set the boundaries however you need to for your own situation. But you know that you're going to be heard. And as you work through the specific aspects of the 60-minute money workout, you're going to find that you can work through these aspects easier. For example, the first one is the make up your mind warm up. And during that time, you actually start out by saying something positive to your mate, and you decide what topic you're going to talk about. For example, living on a budget. So as you work through each of these aspects, the boundaries have been set, the lines of respect have been drawn, and you've agreed to abide by those boundaries so that you can make progress in the 1 hour that you have that week to work through these specific topics.
How many weeks should you set aside to go through this? Is this an eternal thing that every week for the rest of your life you will be doing this for an hour? What's the time frame here?
I think that is one of those things that's a little bit subjective. It's up to the individual family. For example, some people that are really having trouble with their finances, or let's say that they're going to plan a vacation and it's coming up in a month. You may want to have more than one money workout every week. You may want to have 2 or 3 a week if you're working on something specifically. But maintenance is a great thing. So I would say that once you work through specific issues, that you come back at least twice a month. Mm. And that's just 2 hours a month.
Sure.
So you can talk about specific topics. One of the things that we talk about is, for example, the kids' allowance. Mm. And we talk about how we're going to administer that and what that looks like. And we invite the children in on the conversation as well. So I think it's something that should be ongoing, but it will vary according to couple and according to your monetary needs at the time.
Mm-hmm. And Ryan, I have in front of me in Ellie's book, The 60-Minute Money Workout, she has a pre-workout, okay, on fiscal fitness, which lists 10 questions. I'll read you a couple of them. Number one, do you currently live on a budget? Number two, do you consistently stick to your budget? Mm-hmm. Do you have a savings account? A couple other things like that. All right, Ellie, I took your little quiz.
Oh.
And I came out as severely average. Okay, that kills me. I don't want to be average at anything.
But let alone severely average.
Severely average. What is my prognosis then if my husband and I sit down and start doing this? How long do you think it'll take me to kind of get our wheels back on the wagon and get going forward strongly?
Luann, you have said that you're already a born saver.
Yeah.
So you're sitting on go when it mm-hmm. comes to some of these aspects. It may be that there are some particular areas where you and your husband need to come together to improve these areas a little bit more. So I think that if you started the money workout just within a couple of months, you're going to be above average.
Oh,
so
yes.
You don't
I
need
love
to
this
worry
woman.
About that.
Ellie, what do you say to the couple that goes through the workout and they're looking at budgeting for the first time in their lives and they write down how much they make and then all the expenditures they have and they look at it and they go, it leaves nothing left over. Mm. If we follow a budget like you say we're supposed to, we're never going to have any fun.
That's an important point, Ryan, and I think that it's important to budget fun into every account. So you start where you are and you do what you can. When we had $40,000 worth of consumer debt, there wasn't a lot of room for fun, but maybe we're paying down our debt a little bit less than we would want to, but we set up a budget that wasn't so restrictive that you're destined to fail. And so when it comes to our finances, we also have to set up a realistic budget that has room for fun so that you're more likely to stick to that budget. Maybe you'll be paying off your debt a little bit more slowly than you would otherwise. But the point is, over the long term, you're going to stick to that budget because you have fun factored in,
sure.
and you're going to reach your goals.
Mm. Ellie, I think it's important at this point to put a little more specific picture on what this looks like. Okay, so let's go back to when you were $40,000 in debt and had to create this budget, like Ryan said. Give us now some practical examples of what your life looked like trying to save. Okay, so let's start with one of the biggest areas for me, which is the food and grocery bill. Give us a little bit of a picture of some of the main things that a listener could do right now today to begin trimming that and being a little more healthy financially.
Luann, it's really interesting because I went back the other day and I added up how much money we saved on coupons and on food over the course of 20 years. And this was based on the USDA cost of food at home. And do you want to take a wild guess as to what we saved over 20 years?
Over 20 years. $50,000.
That's a good guess, Ryan.
Oh, I think it might be more. Over 20 years? Oh, you've got to go over $100,000.
You're right, Ryan. It's $160,000 is what we saved over the course of 20 years. And there's a scripture that says, despise not the day of small beginnings. So I think God really is in the details. And there's nothing smaller than a coupon when it comes to grocery shopping. But the real key to saving money at the grocery store is to layer the savings. And so what I would recommend that people do right now is they download apps for their favorite store that they're going to. And just on that app, by accessing the savings that are there, even coupons that could just be scanned right into the register when you check out, those kinds of things, you can save a lot. And so what I recommend is that you buy things when they go on sale, when you have a coupon, preferably a double coupon, and when you have other added savings factors. For example, when you go to the store, you can oftentimes combine a manufacturer's coupon with a store coupon. So, for example, in our part of the world, we have Walgreens. And if I'm going to shop there, I can have a Walgreens coupon, which is a store coupon, for a bottle of a secret deodorant. And it's normally $2.49. With the coupon, it's 99 cents. And then I have a dollar off manufacturer's coupon. So when I combine both of those, I get the item for free. Hmm. And that's how extreme couponing is done. You combine multiple savings factors. Now, let me give you one of the easiest tips to cut your food bill in half and that is just to go to couponmom.com. That's not my website. I wish it were. Mm-hmm. But that is a way where you put in your zip code, and they will tell you where, what all the sales are for that week, what manufacturer's coupons are out, what double coupon stores are in your area, and what store coupons are out there that can be combined with the manufacturer's coupon. So that's just couponmom.com, and you can get a lot of really good tips there.
And you also suggest to create your menus around what's in your pantry already. Don't say, I want to make this, this, and this, and then write your list. Explain that.
That's right, Luann. When you menu planning will really help you as opposed to someone who has no kind of plan at all. But I go further than that. That's what makes it kind of extreme when it comes to saving money. And that's the whole idea of making out your menus according to what you already have on hand. So the things that are in my pantry are things that I've bought when they were on sale, when I had a coupon. I have paid the least price possible for everything that's in my pantry. So as I go through to make out my menus for the week based on what I already have on hand, yeah, I may have to buy some cottage cheese to make lasagna or a few things here and there, but I have the confidence of knowing that I've paid the least price possible mm-hmm. for everything that's on the dinner table that night.
Okay, that's all fine and good, but we all know, hey, my son has a soccer game tonight. I have to be there at 5:30. I pick him up from school at 4:30. I don't have time to go home and make a big meal. We're going to go out tonight. Are you telling me I can never do that?
Oh, no, not at all. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I help my millennial children with, those that are in college and beyond, is to learn to save ways on eating out. And one of the best ways that you can do that is to go to a site called restaurant.com, and you can get a $25 gift certificate for only $10 or $15. But wait, there's more, because I never pay $10 to $15 for my restaurant coupons. I go to retailmenot.com, which is a coupon code site, and they give me the coupon code when these restaurant coupons are on sale, to where I'm only spending $2 to $3 for a $23 gift certificate.
My head is spinning. Okay. So you go to these websites and it walks you through how to do this.
It does. And then, Luann, there's a lot of other ways that you can save money. One of the most popular ways right now is on group buying sites, mm-hmm. Groupon, places like that, because a lot of restaurants are wanting to get new people to try out their restaurants that have never tried it before. So it's routine to get the equivalent of half price eating mm-hmm. when you go to a group buying deal.
And before we leave this issue, I would imagine there's just a little bit of a caveat, though, for the spender, who, even though it's a great deal, you shouldn't necessarily go after all of these deals. Because if it's at a restaurant that you know you'll never eat at, for instance, okay, I'm not really a sushi fan, but if a great coupon comes through for sushi, I shouldn't automatically buy it. So you would say there's still some discretion that needs to come in.
Absolutely, Luann. It's very important that you can not go broke saving money. Mm-hmm. And so it has to be within your budget. Mm-hmm. And if your entertainment budget can afford the restaurant coupon that you're trying to buy on a group deal, then by all means get it. But be very careful and judicious. And if that group deal is going to last for a day or two, just walk away from the computer, give it a little bit of time so you're not falling prey to impulse yeah. buying. And when you come back to get it, then you know with confidence that you are getting a good deal.
Mm. I was just at Costco the other day, and they had a gift card for a local restaurant that Laura and I like, and it was $40, but it was $50 in restaurant money. So you get an extra $10 for spending that. And we already go there. There's no reason not to save the $10.
Right. And that's an example of really cool ways to be able to save that are right up your alley. Mm-hmm. Another thing that you can do is to go to Facebook or follow on Twitter those places where you'd like to eat. For example, my daughter went to Moody Bible Institute up in Chicago, and she followed Sprinkles Cupcakes. Mm-hmm. And every day they tweeted a word of the day, plus she followed them on Facebook. And one day she actually went in. She used a Facebook coupon that they had that time. She was also alerted that between 2 and 4, if you, anything you buy, you get one free. Plus, she got the word of the day tweeted. So she went in and she bought one cupcake, and she only paid for one cupcake, but she got four cupcakes. So it's
goodness.
A sweet deal.
Yeah. So see, technology can really help. You're sure. right there with the Twitter and the app and all mm-hmm. of that.
One thing I would say to our listeners, if you're using coupons at restaurants, which is fantastic, still tip as if you were paying
you
the
bet.
Full amount.
That's
your
right.
waitress or your waiter, your server doesn't need a discounted tip as well.
That's right. I think it's very important to tip before any discounts or anything else and to be generous.
Mm-hmm. Ryan, To quote your dad, oh, where has the time gone?
I know.
The clock is showing us that we have come to our time together today, and all we've gotten to is groceries and food, and you have so much more.
That's right.
Can you stick around and come back next time, and
Absolutely.
We will hit this a little bit more?
Good.
Well, then, in the meantime, if you would like to find out how to get a copy of Ellie's books, The 60-Minute Money Workout or The Little Book of Big Savings, you can do so by visiting drjamesdobson.org, where we will have details on all that we talked about today. Of course, you can always give us a call. The number, 877-732-6825.
And I assure you, you will not be disappointed. Mm-hmm. If you need some help with your finances and you're trying to wrap your hands around this, these will apply to you right now, and you'll be happy you did.
Well, Ryan, I might even get a copy for one of my sons who's just now starting out on his own. Mm-hmm. Here in the close, I think it's appropriate to remind you that Family Talk is completely listener-supported. We would love to invite you to partner with us and donate as you are able to. You can do so at drjamesdobson.org. Or by giving us a call, that number one last time, 877-732-6825.
Thank you so much for joining us today, and we invite you back next time as we continue this intriguing discussion with America's family financial expert, Mrs. Ellie Kay. That's next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
We'll see you then.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.